This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago, where research meets real-world impact. The master's program in social work blends classroom learning with extensive field education guided by faculty known for groundbreaking research. Applications are open at crownschool.uchicago.edu/socialwork. Inspire change. Shape the future.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. NPR, The Washington Post, and The Wall Street Journal are reporting that President Donald Trump is preparing an executive order that would abolish the Department of Education. Like many of his orders so far, Trump and the Office of the President do not have the authority to do this, especially when it comes to the Education Department, because it was created by Congress and can only be eliminated by Congress. And yet, Trump is forging ahead. We were joined with more about what this could mean for the enforcement of civil rights laws and funding for schools by Danielle Douglas Gabriel, higher education reporter for The Washington Post. So what is President Trump doing right now? What exactly is this executive order? Danielle filled us in.
So to the best of our knowledge, that this executive order seeks to do two things. One, effectively create a piece of legislation that Congress could use to try to end the Department of Education or diminish its power, sending a lot of control on the K-12 side back to the states and shifting around other functions such as the federal student aid program to different agencies such as Treasury. And in the case of, say, Title I, which goes to funding for low-income schools and for low-income students in the K-12 space, putting that back at Health and Human Services. So just effectively gutting the department and shifting around its pieces to other agencies, which was a campaign promise of the president.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's making good on that promise to close the department. But at the most basic level, why is Trump doing this? What's his goal here?
You know, I think in a lot of conservative circles for several years, there's been a lot of concern that America's public education system is moving too much towards a progressive liberal version and vision of education. And, you know, you've seen it in protests about what books can be studied in schools. You've seen it about education, about LGBTQIA students. And I think this is a manifestation and just the actual continuation of those efforts coming to the federal stage.
Yeah. Well, I want to get clear on something. What does the Department of Education do for folks who might not be totally familiar, and who relies on the work of that department?
So I think two of the biggest programs of the Department of Education is the Federal Student Aid Program, which this is federal student loans, Pell Grants, all of the money that is necessary for college students to get through school that is administered through the department. Also on the K-12 side, Title I. This is money that goes to low-income schools, schools that serve a high percentage of low-income students. Also IDEA. This is a federal law that protects and affords services for disabled students. All of those sorts of things are administered to the department, as well as the Office of Civil Rights. This is an office that investigates discrimination in K-12 as well as higher ed. So all of these functions really run the gamut of affecting students from pre-K all the way up through grad school. Mm-hmm. And these are the people who would be impacted by any major federal changes.
Wow. So how exactly does the Department of Education enforce civil rights laws and make sure that students aren't being discriminated against on the basis of things like race and sex or disability status? Can you give maybe some examples?
Sure. So oftentimes the Office of Civil Rights opens investigations based on complaints that are sent to them. You see this in the higher ed space. I mean, think about the protests we saw, pro-Palestinian protests we saw. There were a lot of discrimination investigations that were launched because of some of the actions of students took during some of those protests. And OCR will look into them, see if there's any validity to the claims. And if they find that students or the school in particular were in violation of a statute known as Title VI, right? This protects students from discrimination and from anything that could harm their rights. Mm-hmm. If they find that they are not compliant with that statute, then you can be fined. Fines that will go well into the thousands, if not millions, depending on the findings of their investigation. No school wants to come into the crosshairs of OCR, and so oftentimes they are quick to try to find ways to be compliant. Certainly critics of the unit say that they are not aggressive enough in mm-hmm. their enforcement and that they're not effective enough in their enforcement. And certainly we have seen conservative groups question whether OCR, the Office of Civil Rights, is being aggressive enough, especially with the protests we saw on college campuses, especially with incidents of trans athletes participating in high school sports. These are some of the complaints that we've heard from conservatives as to why OCR should be moved out of Ed and into the Justice Department.
I see. Interesting. So one of the tasks of the Department of Ed is to oversee student loans, Danielle. Now, if this is moved to a different agency, would this affect student loans, either the loans that people currently receive or they're paying back or could get in the future?
Certainly the service around student loans could be affected, right, depending on how this is done. And I think this is important to know that there in the past had been bipartisan support for moving federal student aid out of Ed and actually to the Treasury Department. The Obama administration did do a pilot program to see if the Treasury Department could collect on defaulted student loans in a more efficient way than the contractors they used, and found that they couldn't. And okay. that kind of, for the time being, stopped the conversation, because there is a lot of really kind of in the weeds knowledge that folks who work at FSA have that is not easily transferable to other agencies. And certainly at the time, and I suspect this is probably still the case, mm-hmm. there are people at Treasury who are saying, we don't want this program. it's a big mess.
Keep that over there.
Yeah, keep it over there. It's a lot to work on. And that has only become more so the yeah. case since 2015. So I'm really curious to see how this will play out. But again, to your point earlier in the segment, that would take an act of Congress. So it's not something that could be easily done.
Mm-hmm. And to your knowledge, I mean, could this have any repercussions on the money going to universities and colleges?
Well, the move, not necessarily, but some of the president's other orders, certainly the executive order looking to dismantle diversity, equity, and inclusion within higher ed, there is discussion about trying to use that as a way, you know, threatening Title IV funds, which is the federal financial aid that schools get, for schools that don't comply with his diversity, equity, and inclusion order. The challenge here for a lot of colleges is that there's no definitive terms as to what they consider DEI. And schools are like, well, if we will try to be compliant, but compliant with what? Are you considering women's studies DEI? Are you just considering our affinity groups on campus DEI? What are the parameters here? And I think that's the confusion is really leaving a lot of people unsettled at this point.
So when it comes to K-12 schools, Danielle, we heard from Mike Lubelfeld. He's the superintendent of North Shore School District 112 and Highland Park in the suburbs here. I want to play a little bit of what he had to say.
90% of our funding is sourced locally and 7% comes from the state and other sources. So in our district, just about 3% of our funding is from the federal government. And even with potential changes to the U.S. Department of Ed, we may not even see any impacts. We're well positioned to continue our educational initiatives without significant impact from federal changes.
Now, this is a high income school district. But Superintendent Tony Sanders of the Illinois State Board of Education echoed the idea that there won't be a big local impact right now. He said in a statement that, quote,
These actions do not require school districts to make any immediate changes at the board or classroom level. At this time, there have been no changes to federal legislation, regulations, or funding that would warrant a local response, and all Illinois state laws remain intact. So, to your knowledge, Danielle, I mean, could this impact money that's coming to elementary schools and middle schools and high schools, or schools even in low-income districts?
Not in the immediate, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, they're
it's like, how local is this going to get?
Certainly, if you're a Title I school, meaning you have a high concentration of low-income students, you could definitely be affected. But not right now, in the sense that all of this is just in the works. Again, you still need congressional approval to get any of this done. And so until then, there is no impact mm-hmm. on the federal funds that are going to schools across the country. What I think would be important to pay attention to is the president's budget request when that comes down this spring. It is entirely possible that he, you know, makes the request that you zero out Title I funding, you flat fund it. Any of those things could have a material impact if Congress gets on board with his request and pass an appropriations bill that does not give money to schools. And that would have a far more immediate impact, I think, than some of the plans to dismantle the Department of Education. But I do think one thing is really important to note, short of all of the executive orders or to come around dismantling Ed, there is a real kind of gutting of the staff at the Department of Education. And while we haven't seen a material impact of that yet, it is entirely possible within the next month or so that you will start to see the consequences of having less people administering all the programs that schools and colleges and universities rely upon. So I think that's something to watch.
So Illinois' Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker tweeted, quote, "If Trump dismantles the Department of Education, he will be jeopardizing public education for our most vulnerable communities, rural schools, low-income areas, special ed teachers, and students with disabilities." So, you know, clearly he does see some impact happening sooner rather than later to our state. I mean, can you talk more about what kind of impact this could have on maybe public education, like he's mentioned?
I think certainly if we're seeing less funding for some of the most vulnerable schools, some of the most high need schools, that's an immediate impact. But without Congress signing off on this, it's not going to happen overnight. It just can't at this time. But there are ways, definitely through the budget process, definitely through lowering the number of people who are working there who are able to administer these programs, which would really gum up the works in terms of getting money out, mm-hmm. That certainly could have a material impact sooner rather than later. So I think that's worth watching. Yeah.
Could this be maybe seen as a way to move the country away from public schools toward more of a school choice model?
I mean, certainly the president has made it very clear that he is a huge proponent of school choice, mm-hmm. particularly trying to get public money in order to fund private education through vouchers and such. So I do see this as a part of a continuum of what his policy priorities are. And I suspect we will continue to see budget requests and other sorts of executive orders and actions to try to further that effort.
Given everything you know right now, at this point, how likely would you say it is that the Department of Education would go away?
I think it's highly unlikely, in the sense that it takes 60 votes in the Senate in order to end the agency. Given the priorities the president has laid out for the Republican Congress, I don't see this as a top priority. Mm-hmm. Certainly, he could change course and say that this is, but tax cuts, extending tax cuts is a big part of his priorities, and closing the department just doesn't seem to be on that same level. I don't think there are enough votes in order to get rid of the department, but I definitely think we could see the movement of certain functions of the department
right
out of that agency and to elsewhere.
But not a full dismantling. And so, you know, if this is unlikely as some people think it is, and yourself included, you're super close to this and you're following this, what is the point? I mean, is this just a way then for Trump to test the powers of the presidency?
I think that, definitely, testing the powers of the presidency, making good on a campaign promise, at least the optics of doing as much, right? Even if it is far more difficult than he is presenting it to be. And also, in part, just kind of creating a chilling effect. I mean, even if this doesn't happen, there's a lot of fear at the Department of Education among the people that I've spoken to about their jobs, about the continuation of these programs and such. And so I think that's kind of the idea, shrinking the agency to the point to where it's almost meaningless, even if you don't get to fully dismantle it. And a lot of that can happen without congressional support. And I think we're already seeing it happening with the gutting of the staff and what that means for the average family could be, you know, a lot of confusion, a lot of delays in getting needed funding to support education. Right. But we haven't seen it yet. But I wouldn't be surprised if we do see it soon.
As we said, I mean, if this was to happen, Congress would have the power to stop this. I mean, are there steps that other branches of government could take if need be?
You know, I'm not sure at this stage. You know, I think Congress is really where everything begins and ends, because as you said earlier, they created the agency, so they'd have to be the ones to dismantle it.
Yeah.
and or stop the effort to do so.
Mm-hmm. Well, last week, Trump signed an executive order to try to control how schools can teach race and gender. As we know, curriculums are controlled at the state level. Now, I'm thinking about Illinois' TEACH, or Teaching Equitable Asian American Community History Act. Also, efforts to expand Black history education in recent years. I mean, Danielle, do you think anything that Trump is attempting to do at the federal level changes what is taught in the K-12 classroom here in Illinois, or even at the college level?
I think it depends on how the states and the institutions react, right? So certainly a part of the executive order is if you have any federal grant money that is coming to you, right, you have to abide by the president's policies to root out DEI in any way. Now, while there hasn't been a complete definition of what would constitute DEI, it is not outside of the realm of possibility.
Yeah.
That, you know, the sorts of programs that support Black and Brown students or that try to teach Asian studies couldn't be or would be excluded from that. And
yeah.
I think, you know, the more people can get clarity on what the federal government is looking for within that initiative, the better it will be for local districts, because there are tons of these programs across the country, right? Whether you're talking about at the collegiate level or the K-12 space.
Right.
And if there's any federal money coming to those schools, then they will need to pay attention to whether those programs would be in compliance with the president's desires to root out DEI.
All right, we'll leave it there. That's Danielle Douglas-Gabriel, higher education reporter for The Washington Post. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Micah Yason and Linnea Dominic. It was edited by Dan Tucker and mixed by Ari Mejia. We're continuing our coverage around the second Trump presidency as things develop over the next few weeks. For the latest news and analysis with a local twist, subscribe to our podcast to keep you informed and in the know. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening. We'll meet again soon.
I love how WBEZ shows different sides of the story. I never feel like it's too polarized, and I think the reporters do an excellent job of trying to get the full story, trying to show different other sides. I'm often, when I'm listening to public radio, think in my mind, well, what about X? Or like, I have another question. Or like, have they thought about X? And most of the time, WBEZ thinks about all of it, which I really appreciate.